I want to start off today with a story. When I was in 12th grade at basketball tryouts at my school, they didn't have enough players for both an A team and a B team, so they were doing some like extra recruiting just to get some extra guys to join so that they could have a B team. Now, I hadn't played basketball since grade 8, so I was not very good, but I was like, hey, why not? Let me just give it a try just for fun. All right, so as a 12th grader, I was playing on the B team with a bunch of 9th and 10th graders, meaning I was easily the tallest guy on the court. So my rebound numbers that year were insane. It was great. As the B team, we weren't like going anywhere. There was no season-ending tournament or anything. It was just for fun. But that season, our A team was actually really good. And they qualified for the tournament for their season as one of the top seeds. And so after our last B team game, the coach told us, he's like, you guys are welcome to continue joining us for practice so that we could like give the A team a full team to practice against. You can even come and to the games and you can sit on the bench and basically you can be part of the team, but we would just be practice players. So most of these younger guys, the 9th and 10th graders, they're like no interest in practicing if they're not going to play, right? But to me, that sounded awesome because I could see that this team was something special, right? They were going places, and now I had the opportunity to be a part of it. So that team, as they were going through the tournament, they just kept winning. And I was right there with them, rushing off the bench at the end of the game for the victories and just joining in with them. And that team actually went all the way to the finals. And so there I was in this massive stadium, hundreds of people in the crowds cheering. And I was there at the end of the bench, just excited for the team in the huddles during the timeouts and everything. I had a chance to be a part of something special, something meaningful. And something that was so much bigger than just me, than just myself. Have you ever had an opportunity like that? To be a part of something bigger than yourself? Maybe it was a business opportunity or becoming a couple, starting a family, something that kind of gave you that purpose, like, yes, to get out of bed in the morning. Have you ever considered Christianity that way? Because that actually is Jesus' invitation to us, isn't it? Come, be part of a mission that's so much bigger than just you. When Jesus says, follow me and I will make you fishers of men, and he says, go and make disciples of all nations, he's calling us to come, be a part of God's mission. Come be part of something that God has been doing since the very beginning. So I want for us this morning to do two things. First of all, we're going to unpack through the scriptures, what is God's mission? What is it that he's been doing in the history of the world? And so we're going to briefly kind of trace that theme throughout the scriptures, and that's going to try and hopefully give us a framework about how to think about missions and God's mission. And then secondly, we're going to talk about how can we be a part of that, okay? So that's where we're going, right? But let's start back at the beginning. In Genesis chapter 1, right? God is introduced as the creator of the universe, the sovereign king over everything. In Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, all things, the entire universe. And then what was the state of the earth at that point? Well, it says there in verse 2, the earth was formless. Or we could say it was chaotic, it was without structure or form, and it was void, or we would say maybe empty, and darkness was over the face of the deep. So the earth was chaotic and empty and dark. And then so what did God do? Well, the rest of chapter 1 tells us the story of God forming the formlessness and filling the emptiness. Right? He's structuring things. He's creating the world, designing it according to his own will and design. And then there in verse 3, we see, let there be light. He speaks light into existence and it pushes back the darkness. And so this is God's mission from the very beginning. His light pushing back the darkness. And so in Genesis chapter 1 and 2, we get this beautiful picture of God's kingdom of light there in the Garden of Eden. Everything is according to his design, his plan, his purpose, perfect relationships between people, perfect relationship between God and mankind. And so this here, this picture at the beginning is how everything was meant to be. That's how it was supposed to be. But then, early on, there were some rebels, right? Rebels who did not want to live under the rightful rule and authority of God, the rightful king. Rebels like Satan, sin, and death, these big kind of cosmic enemies of God. And so they set up their own little rival kingdom of darkness, right? Like a rebel faction that's trying to do a coup against the government. Right? They're trying to usurp God's authority. And then in Genesis 3, they deceived humanity to join in their rebellion, to join in their little kingdom of darkness. And so this spiritual darkness then spreads throughout all of humanity. You know, like before a storm, these thick clouds, right, come over and they block out the sun. And so everything just gets dark. It's 3 p.m., but it feels like it's 8 p.m., right? But God didn't give up on his people. So he set out on a mission to win back those rebel hearts. And that's what we get throughout the rest of the biblical story. It's like it's God breaking through that darkness. Like maybe you've seen the little rays of sunshine that burst down through the clouds when it's all dark. Author J.R.R. Tolkien illustrates this very well in his Lord of the Rings. In his story, there had been this great glorious kingdom that kingdom of humans, right? And that everything was good and right, and it was great and glorious. They built statues to celebrate these great kings of old. But by now, by the time of his story, the kingdom had fallen into decay and enemy. The enemy had kind of taken over the land, and these, you know, clouds had covered over the land and just created this darkness or this shadow. And so then these two of the good guys are walking their way through the land and on their way to try and defeat the enemy. I won't get into the whole story for you. But then just for a brief moment, there is a break in the clouds and these rays of light shine through the darkness, and they light up the flowers that are around one of these king's statues, his head, that had been broken down by the enemy, right? And then one of the guys says, "Look, the king has got a crown again." And then just like that, the sun ray disappears, and it's back to the darkness. And here in the midst of all this darkness, there is a little glimpse of hope, right? A little reminder of that great kingdom of old, and also kind of pointing forward to this is what would be once again if they win the victory, right? And so that's like what we get in the biblical story. It's these little glimpses of God's light breaking through the darkness. So, for example, in Genesis chapter 12, God chooses one family, Abraham and his descendants, right? And they were to be God's people. And he was going to be their God. And so we know that's who becomes the Old Testament nation of Israel. And God's purposes for Israel was for them to be almost like a little miniature kingdom of light, like a little mini version of his kingdom of light amidst all the darkness in the world. And God's relationship then with Israel was going to show off to all of those other nations who he was, what he was like as the good and the rightful king. So for example, like in the Exodus, right? Israel was enslaved in Egypt by the Pharaoh. And so Moses goes to Pharaoh and says, "Let my people go." And he refuses. And so God sends all these plagues on him. And so then in Exodus, he says to Pharaoh, "For this time, I will send all my plagues on you yourself and on your servants and your people so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth. For by now I could have put out my hand and struck you and your people with a pestilence, and you would have been cut off from the earth. But for this purpose I have raised you up, so that my name might be proclaimed in all the earth." Now, if we think about their context for a second, so in Egypt, they had a a God for everything, right? Like a God of the sun, a God of the moon, a God for the Nile, a God of bulls and frogs, like everything had a God. And then in the land that the Israelites were going into, the land of Canaan, they had all kinds of idols that they worshiped, Baal and Asherah and Dagon and all these different idols. But there, in the midst of all these polytheistic cultures that were worshiping false gods, God says to Israel, no, you are to worship one true God, me, Yahweh, the only God. And my relationship with you, through my relationship with you, everyone else is going to learn who I am, that I am the one true God. They were to be different than all the nations around them, like a little beacon of light in the midst of all the darkness. And so then God gives them a law through Moses to govern their society. In a way, actually, as we compare to the other laws of that time, it's a far more advanced kind of societal law that they were to be ruled by, right? They were to be a place, Israel was to be a place where justice ruled rather than vengeance. They were to be a place where they looked out for the unprotected, like the poor and the foreigners, the fatherless and the widows. And then as their society lived in that way, following the laws of the Old Testament, they would be such a contrast to all these other nations that they would shine out like a little beacon of light amidst all that darkness. And so this is exactly what we see as we follow through the story of the Old Testament, that when the kings of Israel actually followed God, when they obeyed God and they led the nation based on God's word, the law of the Old Testament, then they actually prospered and they fulfilled their role as a light to the nations. So for example, in their heyday during the reigns of King David and King Solomon, we see this picture of the Queen of Sheba has heard all the way down in Africa about what was going on in Israel. And she said, I got to go check it out. And so she went up to Israel, and in 1 Kings chapter 10, she proclaimed, blessed be the Lord, that's Yahweh, your God, who's delighted in you and set you on the throne of Israel, because Yahweh loved Israel forever. He has made you king that you may execute justice and righteousness. This little mini example of God's kingdom of light that was shining out to all these other nations and pushing back the darkness. But I think you might know the rest of the story, that eventually that darkness crept back into Israel. So Solomon and most of his successors then fell away from following after God, and they actually led Israel to become just like all of those other nations that were surrounding them. And so eventually they met the consequences of those decisions and were conquered and taken into exile. Israel was never going to be a perfect example because they were just a nation of people, of sinners, right? Their hearts had been corrupted by sin. They were only ever meant to be an illustration or like a picture that was pointing forward to the real king, to the real kingdom of light. So in the Old Testament, the latter books that most of us probably never read, the prophets are actually looking forward to this king that's coming. Like in Isaiah chapter 9, he says, the people who've walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shone. Right? This promised coming king, he's going to be a light breaking in to this deep darkness. And so when Jesus then shows up on the scene, Matthew actually quotes from this very passage and says, look, Jesus, this passage of the light being shining out in the darkness is being fulfilled in Jesus, right? He is the rightful king. He's not just the descendant of the Davidic dynasty, right? But he's the very Son of God, the light that's come down from heaven. He's entering into our brokenness, and he's pushing back the darkness. That's who Jesus is, right? In John chapter 1, speaking of Jesus, John writes, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And light shines in the darkness, and darkness has not overcome it. In John chapter 8, Jesus says of himself, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Jesus is the light, pushing back the darkness. And so then in his ministry, he goes around and he starts announcing. He says, "Repent, for the kingdom of the heavens is at hand." At hand, that means that it's here, that it's right in front of you, that God's kingdom of light is here because the king is here. The king of that kingdom is here. He's come to defeat evil. He's come to push back the darkness. Like that is the gospel. When we read in the Bible, that is the gospel of the kingdom. And so then Jesus demonstrates this, that he is the king of that kingdom. So throughout his earthly ministry, we get these little glimpses or examples of look, this is what the kingdom of light is like. So a little further on there in Matthew chapter 4 still, verse 24, Jesus is going around. He's healing people, the lame walk, the blind see, demons are being cast out, he's raising the dead. All those things are like corruptions from the kingdom of darkness. But then Jesus shows up and his healing and his miracles and all these things, they're pictures of this kingdom of light, saying this is my kingdom, okay? Or another example, Jesus goes around and he touches lepers, right? A kind of thing that was unheard of, right? Because they're, according to the Old Testament law, their uncleanness would then pass on to you and you would be unclean. But Jesus goes around touching these people, and it's not their uncleanness that makes him unclean, but it's his cleanness that makes them clean. It's a little picture of the kingdom of light. Or another example, Jesus summarizes the law and he says, "The kingdom citizen loves God with all that they are and loves their neighbor." Right? So every time that we set aside our pride, that we set aside our selfishness, we put someone else's interests above ourselves, then we're demonstrating a little picture of the kingdom of light. This is what it's like to be part of God's kingdom. Right? So it's like Jesus is saying here, he's like, guys, don't you remember that perfect kingdom back in Genesis 1 and 2 from the Garden of Eden? You remember that? Before all the sinful corruptions came in, before the kingdom of darkness, that's me. I'm here, the king of the kingdom of light. Come, follow me. Join that kingdom. But with Jesus' first coming, obviously, he didn't usher in the kingdom of light in its fullness, right? We just look around. It's not heaven on earth yet. Still an awful lot of darkness around. But at his first coming, Jesus came like the suffering servant of Isaiah 53. He came to suffer and to die, and his death and resurrection actually won the victory, like defeated his foes, Satan, sin, and death. And so through his death and resurrection, they've been defeated. But it's only at his second coming that he will usher in the full consummation of that kingdom, right? So his enemies won't just be defeated, then they will be destroyed. There will be no more sin, no more death. All things will be made new. It'll be like just like the Garden of Eden. God will be dwelling together again with his people. Only the picture we get in Revelation is in a garden, but it's a city. And so it says in Revelation 21, "And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light. And its lamp is the Lamb. And by its light will the nations walk, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it." So with Jesus' first coming, the kingdom of light has come. It's been introduced, but only at his second coming will it then come in all of its fullness. That's when we'll see the full kingdom of light. Okay, so maybe we could illustrate this thinking about the election and the inauguration, right? So in November, we have an election, we elect a new president, but it's only in March when they're actually installed as the new president, right? There's a period of time in between there, a couple months. And so during that time in between, there's actually a name for that outgoing president. Do we use that here? We use it in America. Do you know what that? They're called the lame duck, right? A lame duck. They can't do anything. They're powerless, right? Because they've actually been defeated. right? We already know that they're on the way out. They don't have any real power. There's a new person. There's a new ruler that's coming in. Okay, and so that's kind of like this idea of the kingdom. The kingdom's already here. Jesus is the king. God's enemies are defeated, but not yet in their fullness. But it's not yet here in its fullness. That will only come when Jesus returns. Okay, does that make sense? That period in between. Okay, so then, all right, coming back to Jesus' invitation. Come, follow me. When Jesus says, follow me, essentially what he's saying is, come and submit yourself to the true king. Become a citizen of the kingdom of light, right? Transfer, we could say, transfer your allegiance from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. Like in Colossians chapter 1, he has delivered us from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption and the forgiveness of sins. So, you see, living in this kingdom of darkness, we're enslaved to sin. But that's not actually really living at all. Like, I say living in the kingdom of darkness, but it's not life. It's actually like a living death. It's kind of like being a zombie, right? Those of you who watch those things. They're kind of alive. They're animated. They move around. But they're supposedly, they're dead, right? They're dead, living. So it's like a living death. That's the kingdom of darkness. It's actually bondage to things like unforgiveness and bitterness and pride and selfishness and materialism and alcoholism and sexual addiction and all these different things. But Jesus, through his death and resurrection at his first coming, he provided the way to be forgiven of all of those things and to be reconciled with God. To get a new heart, a heart that can love God and can love people. And he's actually offering real life, not just this living death. He's offering a life of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Doesn't that sound so much better? Like, that is the life that he's offering. So he says, leave your old slave master of sin, that defeated foe, and become a citizen of God's kingdom of life, where it's real light, his kingdom of light, where it's real life. That's the invitation of the gospel, right? It's not just say this little prayer so that you don't go to hell when you die, right? It's come, be a part of God's kingdom of light. Start living in his kingdom now, today. This church thing is a bit new to you. Maybe it's your New Year's resolution to go back to church and you're just kind of getting into this Jesus thing. Please let me extend that invitation to you personally. Apart from Jesus, it's not life. It's just a living death, enslaved to sin, stuck in darkness. But the good news is it doesn't have to be that way. Jesus comes and he's inviting you into the light, not to be scolded or condemned, but to be redeemed, forgiven, made new. So come. But the invitation doesn't stop there. It's not just an invitation to come. It's an invitation to join him in this mission of bringing the light to others, pushing back the darkness. This is what God's been doing since the very beginning. And now he's inviting us, the kingdom citizens, to come and be a part of that, right? Follow me and I will make you fishers of men, fishers of people. So Jesus goes on, he tells his disciples, he's like, hey, you guys remember how I told you, I am the light of the world. Well, now Matthew chapter 5, you are the light of the world. Right, a city set on a hill, it can't be hidden. People don't light a lamp and then you put it under a basket, but you put it on a stand. So it gives light to the whole house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who's in heaven. Paul wrote in Philippians chapter 2, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of this crooked and twisted generation. Among whom you shine as lights in the world. You shine because you're not like the darkness. You're, You're not a zombie anymore, right? You're actually alive. You've been regenerated. You've been given a new heart to love God. So now you're living as a, with the life of Christ, the life that is the light of man. Okay, now we have to be careful here. This is not because we become a source of light, right? It's not, we're not the light of the world in the exact same way that Jesus is the light of the world, right? But it's more like the moon that reflects the sun. We simply reflect the light of Jesus to those who are around us. So this is the point, right? Time to wake up. If this is the only thing you take away from the message, here you go. Missions and evangelism are participating with God in pushing back the darkness. Missions and evangelism are participating with God in pushing back the darkness. Our unbelieving friends and family and coworkers and classmates and neighbors and everybody that we interact with here that doesn't follow Jesus, they're like zombies. They're enslaved to sin and Satan and death. They're trapped living in this kingdom of darkness. Just look around. You know these people. You know their stories. They're trapped in things like injustice and maybe broken families, domestic violence, family disputes, division, hatred, anger, depression, anxiety. And that's not to mention all the coping mechanisms that people turn to try and escape from all those things into social media or shopping or alcohol or drugs or pornography or self-harm or suicide. But it doesn't have to be this way. There's a better way. And that's the good news that we carry. As believers, that's the gospel that we carry, right? Your testimony, you are exhibit A that with Jesus, transformation is possible. Through your every conversation, you invite people to come and find healing from their brokenness by pointing them to Jesus, right? Through your lifestyle, you can actually demonstrate that God's way, look, God's way is actually the better way. Way better than this life enslaved to sin, right? As we are cultivating the fruits of the Spirit in our life, our lives and our attitudes and our perspectives, they become like a shining example now to the rest of the world. We're ambassadors. I love Rico used that word. We're ambassadors that Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5 that just like Old Testament Israel, little beacons of light shining out in the darkness. Now I realize that dark places are hard to go into. Some people are still scared of the dark, right? Because creepy things thrive in the dark more than just like spiders and scorpions and stuff. There's some deep darkness in our world. It's like this black hole that just sucks everything in that people, and a lot of times you won't know it. They'll put on a smile, right? And look all nice and I'm fine, how are you? But inside they're drowning in their darkness. But isn't that why then they so desperately need the light? That's why our message and our role is so important, that this, what we're called to, it's a behind enemy lines rescue mission. That we need to go, we need to be bold and courageous and go into those dark, messy places in people's lives with them and help to rescue them to the light, just like Jesus did for you and for me. This is the mission. It's an exciting mission to be a part of. I was at a youth camp not long ago, sitting across from a girl after a session, and she was unpacking her story, just telling me about her story of domestic abuse and hopelessness, and which had led her to try and cope with that by cutting herself. And so there I could be the voice of Christ to her, speaking truth and light into her situation. And helping her, pointing her to Jesus. I don't know all the answers to that kind of darkness, but I know the one who does. And so I can point her to Jesus so she can find her hope in Christ. So then, the question for us today is, how are we getting involved? How are we participating with God in pushing back the darkness? How are we becoming part of his mission, demonstrating this kingdom of light in the darkness in your community? Now, there are endless opportunities here, as it can go as far as your own creativity and imagination, but I came up with a few suggestions for you just to help get the ideas flowing. So ultimately, this is about you taking that light with you wherever you go. Remember, like we said, that nobody lights a lamp just to stick it under a basket? No, you light it to light and to shine around to into the darkness, right? But when you're trying to share a flame, like from a candle to a candle, how do you get the flame from one to the other? You got to touch each other, right? That's how the one ignites the other, right? They got to get close. They got to rub off on each other. So let me ask you, how well do you know your unbelieving neighbors and coworkers? Do you actively try and befriend and develop relationships with those people in your community, in your circles, who don't actually follow Jesus? Maybe you'd say, oh no, Mike, why would I do that? Don't you know bad company corrupts good character? I wouldn't want their sin to rub off on me. I can't do that. Besides, it might make me look bad associating with those kind of people. Okay, that's certainly a warning to be aware of, but Jesus sent brand new believers back into ministry. Go back and tell the people what God's done in your life, right? So if this is a concern for you, then get some accountability, work on your own, strength against temptation, grow your faith so you're not tempted in those ways, and get in the game, get involved. Don't use it as an excuse. Oh, but Mike, maybe I'm not really good with people. That's not really my thing. Jesus didn't say, go and make disciples if you're an extrovert. Let me encourage you, just start small. Just start with maybe one neighbor. You see them working outside, just pop by, introduce yourself, remember their name, and then greet them by name when you see them. That's where it starts. Just something simple. Build relationships with people. Become friends, right? Introverts aren't always confident in talking, but you know they're often really good at listening. And sometimes that's what people need more. Become a safe space where people can unpack their brokenness. Because you know what? I'm not perfect either. We all need grace. That's why we come to Jesus. Be a tangible example of God's love and his grace to those people until they find it directly from him. Parents, you guys are going around to all these different activities and programs for your kids, right? You're rubbing shoulders with all these other parents at events and maybe in the stands at a game or something. Don't just ignore each other. Get to know each other. Build relationships. Start a conversation. Invite the families of your kids' friends over to your house for a braai. When you're making a salad or you're grilling out meat, then listen. Let them unpack the messiness that's going on in their lives and shine your light into their darkness. Invite them to an Alpha course on Tuesday. Maybe that's what they need, just somebody to invite them along. Show these people how a relationship with Jesus can heal their brokenness. Students, take this light to your campuses, to your fellow students, to teachers, to staff. You guys know firsthand that anxiety and depression are epidemic amongst your generation. So, be the light. Fight back against that. Show them that a relationship with Jesus can be the source of peace in the midst of all the kind of stresses and stuff that they're dealing with. Families or couples, have you ever considered adoption? Being a parent to the parentless? Giving a child a godly home to grow up in? Empty nesters, maybe rather than downsizing, you can use those extra rooms to be a home for the homeless. Pensioners, find some young people. Start downloading some of that, all that wisdom, right, that you've been storing up over the years. Give that to, pass that on to the next generations. Whatever your life situation, I want you to think creatively. Use your imagination. How can you use your situation to participate in what God's been doing, to be a part of God's mission? A few other ideas. You can volunteer at a local charity, helping in very practical ways to push back that darkness. Okay, there are homeless shelters, soup kitchens, children's homes, old age homes, whatever it is that you're excited about. You can find a somebody who's working in that area. All those kind of places. They always need volunteers, right? Or you can connect with big global organizations, right? Like we always hear about Heinz talking about going on these big long bike rides to raise funds for the persecuted church. Whatever it is that you are passionate about, find somebody who's doing that and get involved. Go be part of helping push back the darkness. You go on a short-term mission trip. Take a weekend, take a week, a long weekend, something, and go out to a community and be a part of a team that goes out and takes the gospel to those places. You can don't have to wait to be a part of a team. You can start one up yourself. Just get some friends together and go to a place, not for a vacation, but to be part of God's mission. Being intentional about those things. But let's not stop there. You can also be part of God's global mission, going to foreign missions, more longer term. You know, we've talked about this before, that 1/3 of the world's population still live in places that have little to no access to the gospel. That's billions of people. There are simply not enough Christians in those communities. There's not enough candles to light up the rest of that community, right? They need Christians from the outside, from Christian places like us, to go to those places, to live out Christ in that community, to be the light in those dark places. You don't have to be a pastor, a theologian. You don't have to have gone to Bible college, right? God uses every kind of career and profession in his mission. So there is a place for you. There are organizations like SIM that I'm a part of that helps facilitate these global missions. So if this is something that God's putting on your heart, maybe I can get involved in that way. Come talk to me. Come talk to Brian. Talk to one of the staff. We can help you figure out how to take the next steps to get involved in that kind of a way. Or here's another opportunity. You don't even have to leave Namibia to reach all nations, because all nations are coming to us, right? Find an immigrant population, whether it's the Chinese workers that are coming, or the Russians, or the Indians, or international students that come onto campus. Whoever it is, find a way to build inroads into those communities. Get to know people. There are lost people from those unreached nations that are coming to our doorstep. Imagine if the first person that they meet when they get here is a Christian who's willing to help them get accustomed to this new, strange place and culture. What an opportunity. And then as you are going about the mission in all these different kinds of ways, as you are going, let me also encourage you, you can also be involved in sending, right? Because maybe you're not the one who's going, but there are others who will go to these hard-to-reach places. And you can help support them financially, because usually these people are not going towards paid work. They're not going to a church. There's not an existing church there that's going to pay and support them as a pastor, right? But maybe they're going to plant a church in a community where there isn't, right? So these people are, missionaries are dependent on support from local churches, right? So, and people. So you can be a generous financial partner to people who are going out in long-term missions. You can sign up for their newsletters. Find out how you can be praying for God's global mission work, right? And then be an encouragement to them. Write them a note and say, hey, we were praying for you guys today. Right? Get involved. How can you be involved in God's global mission? So there's a whole bunch of suggestions. It is not limited to those things. I would encourage you this afternoon, even, pray. Ask God, how can you be involved in God's mission in a new way, maybe in an increased way, to what you already are? How can you participate with him in pushing back the darkness? When I was in high school, it was time to start thinking about university and careers. And at that time, probably my default would have been to follow my father into software design and do some computer work. I probably could have made a lot of money in that. Would have been nice. But around that time, I heard a story from back in 1983 about a guy who was starting up a little computer company out of his garage. Maybe you've heard of it. His name was Steve Jobs. It's called Apple. So he was looking for a CEO to run his company. And the guy that he was targeting, he went to recruit a guy named John Sculley, who was, at the time, he was the vice president for PepsiCo. All right, Pepsi being, Pepsi, the competitor of Coke, right? I know it's not quite as popular, but still, multi-million dollar company, and he's going to go and recruit this vice president to come and be a part of a startup company out of his garage. And he did, actually. He left. John Sculley left PepsiCo to join Steve Jobs. And so when he was asked, why did you leave? Like, what was it that convinced you? Sculley said that Steve Jobs asked him this question. Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Or do you want to come with me and change the world? So at the time, that question really resonated with me because I was thinking about a career, and so not to go and get a job with Apple, but because I realized that for me, sugar water would have been the computer industry, you know, that technology changes so fast, any kind of app or software that I would have developed would be obsolete by tomorrow, you know. But I wanted my life to make a difference for eternity. And so I said, let me not pursue a software degree, but rather I went to Bible college to become a youth pastor and now a seminary lecturer. So for me, that was a career choice. But I already told you that God can use any career, any profession in his mission. What we're talking about here is the mission and the purpose that drives your life, that directs your life. God is inviting you to be a part of a mission that is so much bigger than yourself. It's inviting you to participate with him in what he's been doing since the very beginning, entering into the messiness and brokenness of people's lives and being a light that pushes back that darkness. Will you come and be a part of it? Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life? Will you come with Jesus and change the world? Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for sending your Son to come from heaven to step down into our darkness, to bring his light, to bring his life into our lives. Pray that you would stir our hearts, help us to know how we can be involved in your mission. Pray that you would help us to reflect the light of Christ into all those around us. Help us to be compassionate to others. Help us to be bold. I pray that you would raise up from among us more and more workers to send out into your harvest field. Pray that we would step up and become involved in your mission. So we pray this in the name of your Son, who is the light of the world, Jesus Christ. Amen.